Really appreciate that table and donut.
From St. Louis Public Radio, in partnership with the Missouri Film Office.
Guys, quick question, the R name?
This is Lights Audio Action.
Ricky, I think so.
All right. You guys ready? Today's table read script is City of the Blues. It's a gritty noir television pilot screenplay about the interwoven fabric of crime, politics, music, business, and sports on the waterfront in late 1950s St. Louis. The story was created by Peter Mayer, and the script was written by Scott Phillips, John Pearson, Peter Mayer, and Joe Leonard. The table read today is directed by yours truly, Scott McIntyre, and produced by Lori Ann Potts, with the sound engineered and designed by Sean Kilker. The talented group of actors you'll hear today are, in order of appearance, Julianne King, Keith Nussbaum, Todd McCalley, Adam Hopkins, Scully Shemwell, Caitlin Gant, Eric Wolfgang Nelson, Don McClendon, Cliff Mirabella, Zachary Scott Clark, and Ashley Santana. All of our actors will be playing multiple roles. We truly hope you enjoyed our table read version of City of the Blues. Now, quiet on set. Lights, audio, action.
Cold open. Black. Legend reads, St. Louis, 1958. Exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel, night. A 1958 Coupe de Ville glides to a stop in front of the Boatman's Hotel, a weathered structure on the levee at the foot of Laclede's Landing, the oldest part of the city. The hotel, long abandoned and empty, is still a unique and imposing structure. Interior, Boatman's Hotel. A homeless man, Clarence, 60s, white, wanders through the remains of a once fine establishment carrying a bottle of Ripple. Hearing something outside, he looks out through a boarded up plate glass window. Interior, Cadillac. Two hard-looking men, Aldo Bonavina and Tommy Stipo, 40s, watch the hotel.
This is it?
Hey, you got no imagination. Gonna be a gold mine.
The Mamaluke who owns it, no? He's gonna be selling it?
Right now, he don't know.
Stipo's gaze narrows. A figure emerges from the darkness, casually walking toward them.
Who the f*** is that?
Wary recognition crosses Stipo's face.
Gino.
Gino Vitale, 40s, so perfect it makes you nervous, strolls up to the front passenger window, flashing a smile. He bends slightly to look into the car.
Hey, Tommy. Aldo. Didn't know you Skanga boys were back in town. It's funny running into you like this.
So you just happen to be taking a midnight stroll by the river?
The big river is one thing we got over KC. One of many.
Vitale looks back to the hotel.
She's a wreck, ain't she?
Yeah, somebody should fix her up.
A beat.
You make a deal with the rich boy?
Tomorrow morning.
Vitale nods. He looks away from them, out onto the Mississippi.
Thought we had an understanding with Vince. We take the property. We make sure our cross-state friends were taken care of.
Now it's gonna work the other way.
Well, like I say, it's a big river.
Hey,
tell Killer Joe everybody's gonna be happy.
Vitale smiles.
Everybody's gonna be happy.
He slaps the hood of the caddy.
Enjoy your beautiful evening.
They watch as he walks away back into the shadows. Stipo takes a breath. Suddenly, three sets of headlights flash on in unison and roar toward the Cadillac. Two of the cars deftly pull to within inches of it, hemming Stipo and Bonavina in, fore and aft. The third car screeches to a halt alongside. Dark, powerful men pour out on all sides. Cut to black fingers on a worn fretboard. The first notes of a classic blues standard. Interior, Mike's Blues Deluxe. The house band, The Exciters, six musicians, all African-American, are on stage opposite a fine, polished oak bar. Though far from a dive, the club has the comfortable, intimate feel of an old-time saloon. The house is packed, the dance floor crowded. Mike Palachek, 50s, ex-boxer, stands in a dark corner near the bar, taking in everything. As the singer takes a breath and begins. Cut to exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel, night. The music continues. Stipo and Bonavina run down the street. Stipo has his gun out. Bonavina is frantically trying to get to his, but he's panicked. Stipo turns and fires. He misses and keeps running for cover. Bearing down on them are Marcel Tubia, Syrian, 40s, and three other gunmen. Cut to, interior, Mike's Blues Deluxe. A pretty waitress brings Mike a highball, flashing a seductive grin that Mike doesn't seem to register.
I didn't ask for this.
You looked like you could use one.
He shrugs.
Thanks.
Cut to, exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel, night. Bonavina is down. Two of Tubia's men stand over him, one pointing a gun at his head, the other pulling a wire garrote over his head.
Crazy bastards! We got a truce on!
Tubia's man steps on Bonavina's back and pulls on the wire. Bonavina's hands go up to his throat. Interior, Boatman's Hotel, lobby. Clarence watches, horrified. Cut to, interior, Mike's Blues Deluxe. Mike nods to the beat, not happy exactly, but as close as he gets, as the band continues to play. Patrons move on the dance floor, the bar alive with the rhythm. Cut to, exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel, night. Stipo is behind a short wall now, crouched. He fires. Misses.
Etali, spread out!
The gunmen spread out as they approach Stipo's hiding place. He fires again, hits one of the gunmen in the leg, who goes down. Before Stipo can regain his cover, Tubia fires, hits his right arm. Stipo screams, drops his gun, scrambles to pick it back up with his left hand. Cut to, interior, Mike's Blues Deluxe. A man behind the bar, Cab Younger, 60s, black, former boxer, steps up to Mike. He gives him a look, quietly alerting him to some trouble.
Says he's got a tab. I told him ain't no tab. He say talk to you.
Vitaly sits at a table behind Mike. Mike, pointedly, doesn't look.
Tell him first drinks on me. It ain't no tabs.
Cut to, exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel, night. Stipo is still behind the wall, taking wild, blind, left-handed shots at the advancing gunmen.
You must be f***ing crazy, Tubia!
The gunmen are now flanking Stipo on either side. He backs up against another wall as they get closer. Tubia and the remaining gunmen crowd a badly bleeding Stipo. Tubia holds a piece of rebar.
Beg for your life.
Please. Please, Marcel.
The gunmen laugh.
Please.
The gunmen look sideways at Marcel, who smirks before smashing the rebar against Stipo's temple, busting it open. One of the men loops the garrote around Stipo's throat. Tubia extracts a stiletto dagger from his vest pocket and flips it open, approaching the struggling Stipo. Cut to, interior Mike's Blues Deluxe. The crowd is going wild, the band in a tightly controlled frenzy, but Mike stares without emotion at Gino Vitale at the bar, smirking, his arm around a beautiful woman. Gino sees him and raises his glass. He looks away without seeming to register the cold loathing in Mike's eyes. Fade to, super title, City of the Blues, end of cold open. Act 1. Interior, Mike's office, day. Mike sleeps uneasily on a cot. He bolts upright with a scream of primal rage. He looks about, orienting himself, then rises. He washes his face in the sink. In the early morning light, Mike's cot and other effects show that this space, bare bones as it is, also serves as Mike's living quarters. Interior, Mike's Blues Deluxe, day. Mike comes downstairs, adjusting his necktie. The place is empty. He unlocks the front door and opens it. On the stoop sit copies of the Post-Dispatch and the Globe Democrat, and in the mail slot, a stack of letters and a folded magazine. Mike takes the newspapers and the mail back to the bar, stacks the papers, flips through the letters before tossing them aside. He unfolds the new issue of Look magazine. On the cover, in dramatic black, a policeman stands over a dead body. A banner across the cover reads, St. Louis, the deadliest city in America. Mike grunts.
Once the press gets it right.
Exterior, the riverfront, day. Tommy Stipo's dead, gray face lies in a puddle on the cobblestone street. A clean stab wound on his cheek. A horrible but bloodless scar across his throat, just above the marked indentation of a garrote wire. A scuffed brown shoe gives his temple a tentative push. The shoe belongs to Commander Erwin Dutch Rinicky, 60s, a veteran cop. Next to him, also looking down at Stipo's corpse, is Lieutenant Pat Danaher, 50s, head of the Homicide Division.
Ain't it funny how you get a call about a floater, you never think it's gonna turn out to be someone you know.
And yet, there you are.
Talk to us, Tommy. Who done it?
They're surrounded by uniformed cops, plainclothes detectives, and morgue technicians. An ambulance is parked a few feet away, St. Louis coroner's office emblazoned on its side. Light bulbs flash as evidence photos are taken. In the middle of the river, a police patrol boat makes its way to the scene. Kenny, 30s, the coroner's technician, approaches.
So, Doc, you figure we got a case of foul play here?
Kenny points to the northwest.
My guess is they threw him off the Eads Bridge after they killed him. Current brought him to the bank here.
So no way of telling where they did the deed.
The patrol boat pulls up, its nose settling on the shore. A police sergeant stands fore. He calls to Renicky and Danaher.
We got another body. Got fouled in the rigging of a barge about a quarter mile downriver.
A gangplank is quickly dispatched, and officers awkwardly carry a body wrapped in tarp onto the bank, settling it near Steeper. Renicky and Danaher watch as Kenny and a few other technicians attend to the new body. They pull back the tarp to reveal the victim's face.
Well, look there, Dutch. Your old pal, Aldo.
I remember him, Al.
Aldo Bonavina, you senile bastard. 12 years ago, he did the job on Moxie Berman. Abe Glazer got him off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of people thought Moxie had it coming.
Yeah, that's what Abe told the jury. Plus that a homicide detective beat the confession out of him.
Can you believe it?
Yeah. I watched you do it.
You shouldn't remember so much. You'd sleep better.
I sleep fine.
Renicky kicks Bonavina's corpse.
What'd you figure they were up to down here?
Whatever it was, Nettabino got kind of pissy about it.
I thought he and Skanga kissed and made up.
Yeah, so did I.
They begin walking back to an unmarked cruiser.
5 bodies in one night. Jesus. The mayor's gonna loose dogs.
The other 3?
A hooker and 2 junkies. Living the American dream. Get the labs and evidence reports to me as soon as they're typed.
A reporter among a number of newsmen and TV crews at the barricade shouts to Renicky.
Who are they, Dutch?
No idea. Tell you when we find out.
Is it murder?
Do you have any leads?
Other questions are shouted. Renicky and Danaher pay no attention. They get into an unmarked police cruiser with Renicky at the wheel. As he turns on the ignition, the 2-way radio on the dashboard buzzes. He takes the mic from the console.
Yeah.
Commander, Captain O'Malley requests that you and Lieutenant Danaher meet him at the mayor's office as soon as possible.
Roger.
He puts the mic back.
That didn't take long.
Danaher gives Renicky a look, then begins to sing, imitating Bing Crosby.
Ba 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 blue stars, smiling at me. Nothing but blue stars do I see.
Laughing, they pull away as the crime scene still buzzes with activity. Interior. The office of H. Wells Boardman. Day. An old-school oak-paneled office anchored by a portrait of a stern old man circa 1925. Below, H. Wells Boardman, 70s, sits with the bearing of a general behind an enormous, imposing desk. William Jannings Fremont III, 40s, his patrician good looks ravaged by fierce dissipation, sits down opposite.
William, marvelous to see you.
How are you, Wells?
I'm well. You look a little peaked.
Late night.
How about some hair of the dog?
He presses an intercom.
Everett, 2 Bloody Marys, please.
Right away, sir.
Time was your father and I used to lift a few glasses together. And a few skirts as well.
He mentioned the glasses, but the skirts...
It was during the Taft administration.
Wells, you're still the most formidable man I know.
If only that were true. How's Hope?
I rarely see her.
I'm sorry.
I'm not.
A lot of us were pulling for you to patch things up.
Well, some people should never marry.
Are you divorced yet?
We haven't filed.
The door opens and Everett, Boardman's butler, enters with 2 Bloody Marys on a tray and serves them.
That's all for now, Everett.
Yes, sir.
Everett leaves as Fremont takes a large gulp. Boardman sips his drink.
You remember Everett from when you were a boy? You were over here roughhousing with my boys often enough.
Afraid not.
Whatever happened to your father's man, Finch?
He worked for me for a few years. Broke his hip about 52, 53. Couldn't work anymore. Had to let him go.
Shame.
Fremont finishes his drink and dangles his glass.
Another round?
Boardman smiles indulgently, presses the intercom button.
Another Bloody Mary, Everett. Just the one.
Yes, sir.
William, I have a business opportunity for you. It concerns the boatmans.
This catches Fremont's attention.
Huh? That's odd.
How so?
Well, I got a message from some guys who wanted to talk about a hotel, and I can't remember inheriting any other hotels.
Who were they?
No idea. I'll have to ask my girl.
Everett comes in with the Bloody Mary. Fremont lifts it immediately.
Cheers.
Have you heard about the plans for the monument?
Sure. You're involved, I imagine.
I have a group of investors interested in the old wharf. As a civic duty, more than a commercial enterprise, you understand. It would be a disgrace for those derelict buildings to be within sight of the gateway to the west. Refurbished, that once great, grand hotel would be the centerpiece of the landing.
Hell, if I still owned it, I'd give you the damn thing.
Boardman tenses.
You didn't sell it. Your great-grandfather built that structure.
No, nothing like that. When Hope threw me out, one of the things she was insistent about was that I give the boatmans to Billy.
Your stepson?
Thinks he's a musician. Wants to play the guitar in a colored combo, if you can picture that. He's got it in his head. He's going to renovate the hotel and turn it into a club of his own.
To play race music? God!
You could sure talk to him, but he'd never sell it. That club's his dream, you know. Ah, remember those?
Fremont sips his Bloody Mary. Boardman, with an unreadable expression, regards him. Interior. Mike's office. Day. Mike sits behind his cluttered desk. Across from him is a black man in a good suit, Detective Marvin Gates, 40s. A second African-American detective, John Stack, 30s, stands behind Gates looking at boxing photos on the wall. Gates hands Mike two mugshots.
You know either of them?
I need my lawyer.
Gates smiles, shakes his head.
Seen him. Can't remember his name.
Aldo Bonabina.
And this one's Tommy Stipo. Vince Skenga's guys.
Yeah, not low echelon either.
And why do you care?
Washed up on the banks of the wide Mississippi this morning. Thoroughly ventilated.
Yeah, maybe they're gonna ride the Admiral. Stumble on some duck hunters.
They're both on paper in Kansas for aggravated assault. Shouldn't have been out there without a pass from the hall monitor. Don't suppose you've heard what brought them here. Pat told us to ask you.
Steve used to hang around some of my training camps.
Friendly with the Nettavino boys, what I hear.
Yeah, on the surface, anyway. Beyond that, I couldn't really say. Wish I could be more help to you fellas.
If you hear anything, you give me a call, will you? Headquarters is taking this real serious.
Yeah, I bet they are. Hey, how's it going for you two anyhow? See, you still got your stripes.
As long as we stay put in the 9th precinct.
And don't try to arrest no white men.
Yeah, I tell you, one day O'Malley's gonna sober up and find he's made two colored guys homicide detectives.
Yeah, we always stand at the back of the briefing room so he don't get a good look at us.
Gates gives him a rueful smile.
Hell, you knocked out John Henry Lewis. My old man said you were better than Billy Kahn.
That right. Yeah, I should have had his old man managing me, huh?
Stack opens the door and Mike rises to show them out. Interior. Mike's Blues Deluxe, main floor. Gates and Stack tip their hats to Cab, who's drying shot glasses behind the bar. The Exciters rehearse on stage. A white busboy, Billy Fremont, 20s, clean cut, plays guitar. He's good. Mike walks to the bandstand as Billy and the musicians hit a progression of classic blues chords. As the last note lingers in the air, blind Maurice Cummings, 70s, an old-time bluesman, nods approvingly.
Not bad, son. Not bad at all. Go on and ask.
Hey, Mike, I wrote a blues song of my own.
Yeah, what's it about? The time they ran out of pate at the country club.
Maurice and the band members laugh. Billy seethes a little.
I keep telling you guys, my dad's family has money, not me.
Man, from where I'm sitting, sounds like the same thing.
All I've got is what's in my soul and my fingers.
I told him he could do it tonight, if it's okay with you.
Is it any good?
In the groove, baby. Smooth as down country loving.
A lady I'd like to impress is going to be in the house.
Mike shakes his head in mock exasperation.
What are you going to do with this guy, Maurice? Can't convince him to go back to Oxford.
It's Princeton.
Yeah, whichever one you dropped out of.
I like it here.
Waste your life hanging around guys like Blind Maurice and me.
Fine by me. I find you chaps to be quite amusing, really.
Again, Mike shakes his head. He likes the kid.
Play a song for the girl. Go ahead, impress the hell out of her. Oh, and hey, use a rubber, kid.
The band members howl with laughter. The drummer hits a rim shot. Billy is delighted. He calls across to Cab.
Cab, man! This night is gonna be possum sweet and foxy fine.
And with that local exhortation, Billy plays a fast, proficient blues lick. The band, Mike and Cab, raise their glasses and call out happily. End of Act 1. Act 2. Interior, City Hall, day. Oak benches line a marble hallway, light streaming through floating dust. Heels click along as we follow a secretary, 20s, to a frosted glass door bearing the legend, Mayor of the City of St. Louis, Francis Xavier Meehan. Interior, City Hall, reception anteroom. Walking into the anteroom, we meet the mayor's private secretary, Miss Breen, 30s, deadly. The first secretary places several files on her desk. Through the door to the interior office, a voice booms. The first secretary raises her eyebrows, and Miss Breen smiles tightly before continuing her typing. The first secretary exits. Cut to interior, the mayor's inner office. Frank Meehan, 40s, glowers, an engaging, larger-than-life Irish-American politician going to fat. He reads from a copy of Look magazine.
The stunning rise in homicides in St. Louis over the last 10 years is unprecedented, placing it, in sheer numbers of murders, significantly ahead of such larger, notoriously dangerous urban centers as Chicago and New York.
Chief of Police Lawrence O'Malley, 60s, a big, old-time Irish cop, shifts in front of Chief Renicky and Lieutenant Danaher. District Attorney Stephen Jablonski, 40s, sturdy, practical, sits next to them, unsettled. In the background, City Attorney Howard Eisen, 40s, handsome, sharp, watches carefully.
It is unclear what, if any, potential remedies city officials plan to effect. Mayor Francis X. Meehan seems disinclined to confront the problem directly or to cooperate with the press.
Meehan, apoplectic, jabs at the magazine with his finger.
And here's a picture of me yucking it up at a KFC fundraiser!
Meehan slams down the magazine.
Last week, I was the next Harry Truman. And today, I look like a grinning jackass, laughing in the bar while my constituents get mowed down like wheat.
So, here we are, sports fans. What are we gonna do?
Police Chief O'Malley holds his ground.
I've tripled patrols downtown and in the colored neighborhoods. Projects look like a cop convention. And there'll be more Klansplosmen than hookers on the stroll tonight, to be sure.
Jesus H. Christ! Our problem is those two goombas you just fished out of the river! St. Louis Mafia chieftain Giuseppe Killer Joe Nettabino has been untouchable.
Meehan settles into his chair and looks at the three cops.
The son of a Chalbert says straight out that we're in bed with the mob.
He sets the magazine on the desk. The bluster is gone. He's all business now.
All deals with Nettabino are off. I mean all of them. Dope, whores, numbers, all of it. I don't care what they've been paying or who they've been paying it to. It's done as of right now. You hear me? Let's have arrests and indictments all the way to the top. Oh, and Steve, I want you trying those cases yourself. And we'll be heroes again.
Frank, I can't stand up in front of a judge and say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Killer Joe did this. I rest my case.
Sure you can. And Dutch and Pat here are gonna give you everything you need.
He looks pointedly at Renicky and Danaher, who look back stoically.
Get started now, guys. We're already out of time.
Renicky breaks the silence.
You know when Skanga finds out what happened to these guys, he's gonna go ex-
Don't let that happen, Dutch.
How do you propose we stop it, Frank?
Find a way! I want a rest before the week's out. And if any more Kansas City wise guys come into town, collar them. Spitting on the sidewalk, being ugly in public, I don't care. Just get them off the street. We got our work cut out for us. Let's show this whole country how we do things downtown.
Grim-faced, O'Malley, Jablonski, Renicky, and Danaher all rise and begin filing out. Eisen remains. He closes the door after them and comes back to Meehan.
Masterful, Frank.
A beat.
But?
You neglected to mention one salient detail. We know why Skanga's guys were in town.
No, we don't, Howard. You don't know.
This is no time to be twisting Netabino's tail. He just did you a big favor.
What? By littering my riverfront with stiffs?
By letting Vince Skanga know to keep out of this. Could you have done that, Mr. Mayor?
Vegas is crawling with feds and reporters right now, trying to prove a tie-in with organized crime. If that happened here, I couldn't even get elected dog catcher, much less governor.
You can't get that hotel without Netabino. And without the land that hotel sits on, you can't get your casino. That old hotel is the key to it all.
Meehan wanders to an office window looking out over downtown St. Louis, and just beyond it, the riverfront.
It's so close I can taste it. All the gold that's been pumping into that desert is gonna start flowing down that river, here, to us, to our city. And you and I are gonna be the ones who make it happen.
Meehan looks out at the Mississippi, hypnotized by his vision.
You do recognize that what's good for you isn't necessarily good for the city, don't you, Frank?
Howard, that's the only dumb thing I ever heard you say.
Exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, 2nd Street. Day. An unmarked police cruiser rolls slowly along the deserted wharf. Inside are detectives Gates and Stack. Gates is driving.
Remind me. What is it we looking for?
Anything out of the ordinary.
How come ain't no white homicide detectives wasting their time down here looking for anything out of the ordinary?
Because the Dutchman told them all to put the squeeze on their informants.
Informants? More like bagman.
Dutch say informants.
The kind that gives them $200-$300 information a week. Why don't we have those kind of informants, Marvin? Can you tell me that?
That old lady gave you a donut last week.
As they laugh, a shape lurches across the hood of the car. Gates slams the brakes as it hits the windshield.
Whoa!
The shape rolls off and gets to its feet. It's Clarence, the homeless man. He stares terrified at Gates and Stack for a moment, then runs off down an alley, limping.
That was somewhat out of the ordinary.
Let's go. I want to have to tell Pat that not only didn't we find nothing, we also killed a damn wino.
Exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, Boatman's Hotel. Day. Gates and Stack get out of the cruiser. Behind them, we see a familiar structure, the Boatman's Hotel. Exterior, Mississippi Riverfront, alley, day. Gates and Stack proceed down the alley carefully, not sure what they are getting themselves into. They find Clarence flailing about in a tangle of packing crates.
Hey, man, easy. You okay?
Don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me.
We aren't gonna hurt you. We just want to see if you're okay.
I won't tell. I swear I won't tell a soul.
We didn't mean to hit you.
You didn't see where you came from.
Oh, don't hurt me, please. I won't tell the police. I'll say I didn't see.
Gates and Stack exchange looks, then look back to the wino.
We are the police, man. He's Detective Gates and I'm Detective Stack.
Clarence seems confused more than relieved.
But you're colored.
You're not as dumb as you look.
Are you really cops?
Yeah, cross our hearts.
You really didn't kill those guys?
What guys?
The two guys last night.
What two guys?
Right out there. What you did to them was terrible.
What happened to them?
Strangled them with a wire. Cut their throat. Stuck them 50 times like this. After they was dead.
Stack looks to Gates.
I think the motherfucker actually saw it.
And you imagine him on the stand?
Just the same. He saw it. Now we got the scene.
And an eyewitness. What's your name?
Clarence.
You got a last name?
I used to.
You've been in the joint, Clarence?
Long time.
For what?
Checks. I was a forger.
Clarence, you just get better and better.
I need a drink. Don't you have something?
Gates and Stack each take Clarence by an arm, begin leading him out of the alley.
Okay, Clarence. You come with us.
Oh, no, don't hurt me. Please, I won't tell. I won't write no more checks. I need a drink.
What you drink, Pops?
What you got?
Extreme close-up. A white ball lying on manicured grass. The ball is suddenly, violently struck by a mallet. Exterior, country club. Polo field, day. Polo players on sleek ponies charge after the ball. Exterior, veranda. Diners view the polo match. Immaculate white tablecloths cover all the tables as H. Wells Boardman sits across the table from Gino Vitale.
Is the steak to your liking?
It's fine.
Lewis, the chef, makes the best beef Wellington in the Midwest. A very difficult dish to get right.
Is it?
It's beef wrapped in pastry. And in order to get them both properly done, but not overcooked...
Mr. Boardman, I know perfectly damn well what beef Wellington is. So save us some aggravation and cut the patronizing, huh?
Fair enough, Mr. Vitale. I wanted to meet you here because this morning I learned something troublesome about the property's owner.
Stay tuned for more on St. Louis Public Radio. Listen now at stlpr.org/lights.